Warning, the following podcast is not suitable for those of a positive disposition or fans of Hal Robson Kunu.
Excuse me. Threes a company for Reading at the moment as back-to-back 3-0 defeats once again turns us sliding back down the championship, but with an FA Cup quarter final around the corner, should our glasses be half empty or half full? Speaking of threes company, this is Tyler Stem Podcast episode 52. That's got nothing to do with the number three, but there are three of us here. I'm Dan Wimbush, editor of the Tyler Stem, and I'm joined by my merry band of men, starting with Mr. Alan West, otherwise known as Westy.
Hello.
And deputy editor Johnny Williams. Johnny, hello.
So I've just woken up from my slumber there.
Yeah. One person tweeted in saying they were very much looking forward to an angry Johnny today.
So yeah, another rant coming along.
I can feel it. More than due.
You're hulking up. You're ready for this.
I've got my tea and my water in front of me.
Yeah, rock and roll.
He's going to chuck his teacup around.
Yeah, absolutely. Got some hair dryers to throw around as well. Right, I suppose we have to do this then. I can't say that I'm particularly looking forward to today's show because, and if you're a positive person, I would probably turn off now because this isn't going to be...
That's for you, Nigel.
Yeah.
That's one.
If you're a positive person and want to see the bright side, we're probably not going to be able to offer you too much hope, but we'll do our best. We'll try and be balanced and down the middle and try and offer you some hope.
You speak for yourself.
Yeah. Right, okay, let's get into this. 2-3-0 defeats, lads, starting with a 3-0 defeat at Huddersfield, which I think most people were fairly happy to write off. Came off the back of that 1-0 win at Ipswich. Plenty of team changes made by Steve Clarke, brought in the likes of Danny Guthrie, just coming in out of nowhere, and
Jake Taylor.
Yeah, Hope Akpan playing. And I think people accepted only a couple of days to turn around, long trip up north. This wasn't a game that many people think we were going to win, but even so, to get beat 3-0, bit disappointed.
Very disappointed, and I think I wrote our sort of quick match report, and I said it was the battle between our away form, which had been absolutely outstanding, and we said that we were a team suited to away games at the moment, and our Tuesday night woes, and sadly, the Tuesday night woes won. I mean, why he made six changes, I've got absolutely no idea. The most obvious one for me is... Mackie, I don't know whether he realised that he couldn't play on Saturday against Nottingham Forest, but he wasn't in the squad at all. Or you know, he certainly didn't start the game. And why did you bring in Jake Taylor and Danny Guthrie, who have not played in a very long time? Hope Akpan again. I mean, you can understand one or two changes to rotate the side, to keep it fresh, but to basically change the entire midfield is just, it's absolutely crazy, because these players haven't played together and they're just going to be played off the park. And
yeah,
so it happened.
And more to the point, Jake Taylor playing on the right wing and Danny Guthrie playing wide left.
I mean, it's like that game, was it at Brentford or Bournemouth a couple of years ago? We played four wingers in the middle.
Yeah, it's played four centre midfielders.
Yeah. And again, dreadful.
Yeah.
But I think, again, if you want to put a positive spin on it, I suppose he did speak the week before about freshening it up. He thought the players look a bit jaded. Now, my argument of any of this is, if you've got players like that, and we quite often say, and he said it as well, that he's been told he's got a good squad. Right now, these players need to play at some point, and they should be banging on the door for a first team place. Because let's face it, our form is patchy. Yeah, we have a win, we have a loss, we're getting hammered, or we might grab a win 1-0. But well, our form is patchy. Now, he probably thought, you know what, these players should be banging on the door, let's have a look at them. And they've gone out, and let's face it, they've let us down.
But you don't throw them all in at the same time.
No, I suppose you don't, but maybe he's got one eye on the FA Cup as well, and not getting too many injuries. But it's not that. I mean, the most annoying thing about it is they've gone and got beat 3-0. Then he's thought, well, you lot ain't good enough. Let's put the first team back in. And they've got beat 3-0. So what does he do?
Yeah, in terms of the Huddersfield game, the team selection, I said to Charles on the podcast extra, if you ever played Football Manager and you've had one of those midweek games for a big game and you've literally just thrown in anybody you've got in your squad, that's what it felt like on Tuesday night, because a lot of those players aren't going to be there, and we've got plenty of questions in the mailbag talking about which players you think are still going to be here at the start of next season, and I guarantee half that squad won't be.
And the other dreadful thing is, he's probably thought, we'll keep the same back five, that'll keep things solid, and for the last two games, we've conceded six goals.
Yeah, I'm struggling to see the positives in it. The players themselves said they let themselves down, and I think Oliver Norwood came out and said, look, to be honest, none of us showed why we should be in the team based on that performance. Mm. There were a couple of unlucky chances, but again, and we'll come on to it in the Forest game, again, Reading not taking them.
No.
And clinical finishing by Huddersfield, some patchy moments from Anna Federici, who's having a bit of a rocky spell after a great start to the season. The only real moment of joy for the 187 Reading fans, and credit to you if you're in that 187, that takes that's devotion, was Oliver Norwood nearly scoring from the halfway line. Apart from that,
that's it.
What do you say?
Again, that's a hit.
Even Ishmael Miller scored against us. Yeah. Ishmael Miller, who's on his eighth club, I think, in 7 years.
Yeah, no one wants him.
So anyway, we
could probably have him.
Yeah, we'd have him.
So we put that game behind us. Again, you think, okay, loads of team changes. Reading always lose on a Tuesday night. Fine. Saturday, game against Forest. Forest aren't the easiest of opposition. They were on a massively great run of form. They went and beat Bournemouth, for God's sake, in the midweek beforehand. Unbeaten under Doogie Freeman, had scored 16 goals in 5 games. Reading couldn't have picked a much worse time to play against them. And again, they restored what, for me, Westy, that team that started on Saturday was probably the best 11 they've got at the club.
Yeah, again, you couldn't argue with it, especially after the Tuesday night game when he gave a few of the squad players a match. It was the best 11 they got at the club, and they clearly weren't good enough to beat Nottingham Forest.
Yeah, again, Reading started fairly poorly. It was a scrappy game. Both teams, you know, cagey, no massive chances. Chalobah gave one away in the first 5 minutes, but apart from that, and Forest were doing most of the play. But then Reading, I thought to their credit actually, had a really good last 15 minutes of the first half.
Yeah. I thought the first half was, again, drab and boring, as it has been over the last months. Mm. And there was no excitement whatsoever. Was it?
Only in the stands.
Yeah, I ended up chatting to my dad most of the half. And that's boring enough. But no, there was nothing again, was there? Again, you wouldn't say either team dominated it. It was just a stale sort of first half.
But the last 15 minutes of the first half were very encouraging.
They were great.
McCleary had one cleared off the line. Cox blazed a couple of shots over as well. And we were actually creating something. And Nottingham Forest were almost going back into their shell. And I thought, okay, if we come out in the second half, like we finished the first half, then we could have pressed on. But I think the key moment was at half-time, because Forrest made a substitution at half-time. They put Antonio over onto our right wing, where you have to say McLaren and Gunter were having a lot of success. Didn't see anything from them for the rest of the game. Mm. And they brought on Burke as well on the other side. And from then, Forrest just completely dominated the game. First goal, absolute wonder strike. And from that moment, you could just see the players' heads went down. They didn't really know what to do. They didn't look like they had any ideas whatsoever. And the other two goals simply came from the fact that we were pushing far too far forward. Antonio was just sitting between the defence and the midfield. And it happened twice before they actually scored the second. But Antonio picked it up there and ran at goal.
If you've watched one Reading defeat this season, you've pretty much watched them all. How many times have we heard this story?
Yep.
Reading create a couple of chances, miss them. Opposition take advantage. Score one, and then it turns into a rout. How many games can that apply to this season?
Keeps going on every week, to be honest. Another thing I noticed quite a lot, and I've noticed over the season, is if you watch Reading, I've said all through the season, that you have to have players that are prepared to run behind defenders. Now, in that first half especially, every time one of our midfielders got the ball in the centre of the pitch, they'd look up front and they had Podgrebniak back to goal. They had Cox back to goal. They had the two wingers right on the touchline, pretty much with their back to goal. And it was only chances we created that we looked like we was going to score from was when Gunter or McCleary ran when someone had the ball and they had someone to hit all of a sudden. But one of the strikers needs to do that. Cox needs to be done. He needs to be running in between the lines.
Steve Clark's post-match comments were very telling. He let slip. He was talking about the chance that Gunter pulled back across the box and no one was there.
Yeah.
And he said, and as usual, no one was in the box. So you can tell he knows this is a problem. And it is. No, I mean, we said it all season. Players aren't gambling. They're not getting into the right positions.
Well, I asked you two guys a question. My mate at work said it to me. He said, when was the last time you see a Reading player run through one-on-one with a goalkeeper? I struggle to remember one this season. Mm. So that means we're not getting behind anyone's defence. All we're doing is putting hopeful crosses in.
The funny thing is that, you know, you mentioned, okay, well, the balls aren't going through the middle. So surely you're thinking, ball's going to be coming in from the flanks. I need to get myself in the box.
Yeah.
How many times do people get themselves in the box?
I know, it's poor.
And we've scored goals when they do it. You remember Pogge's header the other week, Chalobah scoring against Sheffield Wednesday. Yeah.
But I'd say who in that box can win a header? I mean, okay, you say Pogge scored a goal with his head, but he's not the best in the air. Cox is 5'8", he's not going to win a header. Chalobah's was at the back of the box, you know, pulled back and he shot from the edge of the box. I don't see why we're sort of persisting with get it out to the wings and try and put a cross in the box, because we're not going to win headers in the box. We're not going to score from that.
At least you put defenders under pressure though, Johnny. You've always got a chance. I mean, Noel Hunt wasn't the biggest player in the world, but he won his first
header. But he had a leap on him. Yeah. He could win headers.
But this is what I'm saying. This is why people should be running behind defenders. This is why when midfielder picks the ball up, one of them, either Podgrebniak or Cox, or even one of the wingers, should be just gambling on a run. So they've got someone to hit. Yeah. Because all they're doing is just standing with their back to goal, looking at him. All right, take it on the chest, and then he just slows the
play. Fairly miserable day for Simon Cox, to the point where the Forest fans were taunting Reading with Simon Cox, he's one of your own.
I did like that, the first one, is Simon Cox, he's always offside. Yeah. So that was
witty. He missed two awful chances, he scored, I think, what, one goal now since November?
Yeah, since Murray left, he's looked a shadow of the player he was earlier in the season.
And to be honest now, you see why he's a player that's only getting 8-9 goals a season at Championship level.
Yep. I thought the two wingers were poor as well again. I thought McCleary had a poor game, especially second half. I don't know if he wasn't interested, but he certainly didn't create anything. And when he did get the opportunity, like you said, his crossing was dreadful. And Robson Carney, I didn't realise he was out there again.
Where was Robson Carney playing, Johnny? I couldn't figure this out.
I didn't even realise he was on the pitch. And I will defend him. Because I think some people give him a hard time, but I'll admit he was completely anonymous.
He was a passenger the whole game.
But it wasn't just that. My problem with him was I couldn't tell where he was playing.
No.
Because he wasn't playing on the left, because often you had Jordan Obita sort of 10, 15 yards inside the Forest half. Had Robson Kanu drifting around the middle just outside the box. But again, he's not getting himself in the box to try and win headers or to get shots. Just not. I don't get it. I don't understand what Steve Clarke said to him. Did he give him a free roll? And if so, don't.
Why didn't he get on the ball? If you got a free roll, you should have the ball quite a lot, shouldn't you? And it clearly didn't. I didn't think anyone I felt sorry for. I thought Williams, I thought he tried, he gave everything he had, and he tried to drive him on, but just there was nothing in front of him.
Even Danny Williams, though, I thought his touch was bad.
Yeah, it was on occasion.
To be fair, the pitch was awful.
But at least he kept going, didn't he? He did keep trying the whole game. Yeah. Right, he didn't have a lot of success. But
Danny Williams said in his post-match interview as well, which again I thought was quite interesting, you can see the players' frustrations now seeping through into their public comments. And he was talking about how, you know, when we go behind, we need to start coming back from games. To my memory, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think Reading have come back to win a home game since that Ipswich game on the first day of last season.
I'm struggling now.
They went 1-0 behind to JTAB in that game, and they came back to win it. Yeah. So that's August 2013. We're now in March 2015. And Ren haven't come back to win a game.
No.
What was it? Adkins had only done it once or twice in his, 60, 70 games?
Yeah, no, he did it away at Norwich and at Doncaster. But apart from that...
Clark's done it once away at Cardiff in the FA Cup.
Yeah. But at home, I mean, that shows to me a mentally completely fragile side, lacking guts, lacking passion. There's no one that's dragging this team back in.
Well, they're getting dragged into the same mentality as when Adkins was here. They look the same sort of players they were then. After they had the little boost when Clark's come in. Now they've gone back into that same pattern of, we're 1-0 down, that's the game's over.
And the opposition has gone back as well. Just sit back, defend, watch two backs of four, whatever. Got no chance of getting through.
It's bad.
And when you're playing away, when an opposition is playing away from home, and we're at home, when the pressure's on us, it's all right for an away team to do that, sit in. You expect that as a fan.
Yeah.
Perhaps that's why we've done it more away from home than at home, because I think when you're playing at home, there's a certain pressure on you, even though you're winning, to keep playing the game the right way.
Yeah. We're too easy to defend against. Far too easy.
Unfortunately, there's problems at both ends, because we're not clinical enough in front of goal. And defensively, we have been better. I think we've definitely been better under Steve Clarke. But again, once the first goal goes in, the heads drop. Yeah. And I wonder if part of that with the defence is like, well, we're not getting back in this game now.
Yeah.
That's got to play a part of it. I mean, Alex Pearce must be sat there thinking, great, we've conceded one, those strikers aren't getting us back.
But you say that, and the interesting thing is, if you look at that game, once they scored that first goal for us, it was a great goal to be worldy. And then we had the opportunity the Gunners put across the ball, and it was a tap-in. It was the simplest tap-in you'd ever have. As soon as that chance went, it was like the register dropped. They thought, here we go. And then they scored pretty much straight afterwards. But for 5 minutes afterwards, they scored after that happened. Mm. And you thought, well, that was your opportunity to get back in the game. At 1-1, I think the crowd were trying their best to get behind them. And that would have been at 1-1. We might have had an opportunity to push on. But after that, like you said, edge dropped. And that was the end of the game, really.
Another player came in for a lot of stick online and on the calls to Berkshire was Chalobah. And at this point, I think I have to agree with a lot of people. I can't see the point in him playing. Because he's not exactly improving the team by a great deal.
No.
And he's not going to be here next season. You might as well stick Norwood in. You haven't got faith in Norwood, Hope Akpan. You've got Aaron Cole, who did, you know, the Forest fan we spoke to before the game picked him out and said he was really impressed with Cole up at Forest. Okay, he's had a couple of bad games since, but I don't see it. I don't see the point.
What was it? I think Steve Clarke said that Chalobah makes a lot of sideways passes or something like that. And it's like, In his post-match interview, I think you need a player that's slightly more dynamic than that, because you've got Williams in there that does that. I think you need someone like Norwood's partner, Williams. I think, you know, when you've got this setup, you need someone who's going to be able to drive forward. And yeah, Chalobah did score a very good goal a couple of games ago, but he hasn't really kicked on. I don't think he's I don't think he's quite got the grit for the championship. I think he's too much of a flair player.
Yeah, I said about him when he first came, he looks very casual.
Yeah.
And when you look very casual when you're winning, it makes you look like you're class. But when you're not winning and you look casual, it just makes you look sloppy.
He had some brilliant touches. I remember one where he just gave someone a little nudge.
Oh, you can tell the quality.
Oh, it's control.
He gave someone a little nudge and then just picked it up on his foot from 20 feet in the air. And just controlled it absolutely like that. But
some of his passing was
very
casual.
He's a player that would be perfect in a three-man midfield. Sitting just in front of that defence,
yeah.
I think he'll be perfect. But I think Steve Clarke said he's not had that much experience playing in a two. And I don't think he's got the work rate or the desire to play in that two.
No.
I can't wait for Jim Carrotan to come back from injury. But again, I mean, he's picked up another niggle and he doesn't look anywhere near the team.
You're not going to see him this year, I don't think. Hardly.
Yeah. So, again, I didn't... And Norwood's come out in the press this week and said he's frustrated, he's not getting game time. I'd be frustrated too if someone who was on loan had come in and displaced me.
Especially when you're losing.
Not that Norwood's pulled up any trees when he has been given a chance, but still.
And the other thing is, Chaloba, he hasn't missed a game. Even when we had a centre-back crisis or Hector missed a game, we didn't bring in...
Cooper,
put Chaloba there. Chaloba's been pretty much the only constant in that Steve Clarke team.
Yeah, and I also, getting to the end of the match, I thought he was very slow to make a substitution as well. So I thought, well, this clearly ain't working.
He was about to bring the yak on, was he, when they scored the second?
Yeah.
And as for the yak, whoa.
We didn't touch the ball again, did he? Well, hardly.
I think he's on a run of 4 out of 10s.
He got a 5 this week, surprisingly. Yeah,
3 4s out of 10 and then a 5. That's all league games.
Well, he's not touched the ball when he's come on.
Thing is, I guess he'll always be a legend because he put us through to the Cup quarterfinals. So on that merit alone, I think he's probably paid his wages.
Yeah. But he's just not had the ball. He just doesn't get the ball when he comes on.
Yeah, and plenty of people, Dom Samuel scored again at the weekend, who will come us out in news bites, and plenty of people calling for him to be back in the team, and you sit and watch performances like that, and you got to agree with them. But any closing thoughts on those pair of games? I mean, Reading still, the bright side about this is we're still 9 points clear of the relegation zone.
Yeah, we're just lucky that Millwall seem to keep losing every week. I know Wigan won this week, but they beat Blackpool, and they look like quite way off. Them two look like they're pretty much relegated.
Now, Blackpool, I think a Blackpool fan was saying on Twitter they have to go at a 107-point pace if they just want to get to 50 points.
Yeah,
season.
It's not going to happen. And Wigan look like they're not going to get out of it either. But Millwall keep losing. That's the only one saving us at the moment. Because if they won a couple of games, we'd be looking over our shoulder.
I still think Reading need to win 3 games.
Oh, definitely.
To be secure.
Clark said he set a target of 12 points. So I think, you know, we definitely want to win that amount of games. But I was saying last week about how tight the league is. This week, we lose a game, we go down from 13th to 18th. It's the psychological fact that if you're in 13th, you think, okay, we're in mid-table, there's not really that much danger. When you're down at 18th, even though it's only, what, 1 or 2 points difference at most, the worry does start to set in. And now we're playing Bolton on Tuesday night, who are 13th. Okay, they're 17th, so that's an even more important game now.
And it's the manner of defeats. You don't mind getting nicked 1-0, you think, well, we've played well and we've lost because we've missed chances. But Reading are getting, my last 2 matches, they've been hammered, let's face it. They've not looked like winning.
Yeah, okay, well, let's try and look at one final thing before we go on the positive front. I thought Chris Gunner had a good game.
Yeah,
good to see him come back after injury, and I thought he linked up well with McLeary.
He tried to be dynamic as well. He tried to get behind the striker.
There was one where someone played a pass over, and he made the curling run in behind the entire back four. No one picked him up and put the ball in the box. No one there. Yeah. As I say, he had really, really good link up in McLeary, but that half-time substitution from Forrest completely shut that entire thing down.
Which was
a shame, because it looked the only positive part.
Well, it was the only chances we created were down that side.
Yeah,
Steve had a bit of a pop at Jordan Beater's performance in the player ratings. Do you agree? I thought he had a fairly decent game.
He's a bit like Chaloba. He's too casual for me. He thinks he's got more time than he has, or he thinks he's got the skill to get out of the situation, and people are finding him out now.
Yeah, and I'm not convinced Robson Carney's much of a partner to have down that side with you anyway. So
I'm not convinced Robson Carney's a good partner for anyone.
No.
At any point, at any position.
I don't know what he offers you, especially defensively. He doesn't offer a lot going forward.
He works pretty hard in the gym, by all accounts, so I'm sure he's a good gym buddy.
Yeah,
he looked
a
bit slimmer this week, actually. He looked a bit more sort of, athletic.
Did he now?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
I was checking him out.
I'm sure you were.
We've covered this a few podcasts ago, Johnny.
Yeah, the Hot or Not podcast. 48, I think.
Yeah, head back and listen to that if you want to hear the hot members of the Reading squad. And then tune in a podcast later to find out who Johnny's missus rates in her top list. Was it
top
Jake
11.
Cooper?
Yeah.
Top 25.
Sorry, Alison. Right, anyway, let's move on to some news bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Right, welcome back to News Bites. A few bits and pieces this week to talk about. While we're talking about negatives, I might as well get this out of the way now. Unfortunately, the under-21s have lost their Premier League Cup They went out in heartbreaking circumstances in extra time to Blackburn. So unfortunately they haven't defended the trophy, but another good run in the competition. They got to the semi-finals. And once again, in a week that saw the under-18s end Chelsea's long unbeaten run as well, it shows the future's bright, guys.
Yeah, we just need the future to hurry up a little bit, yeah. I think.
Need the future now.
To the DeLorean. commiserations to them. So plenty of talent, and it's starting to show around the Football League as well in loan spells. And Dom Samuel, as mentioned, has just scored his fourth goal of his loan spell for Coventry. Doing really well down there, helping them try and avoid relegation from League One. A lot of calls for him to come back. Would you bring him back now, Westy, or would you let him play out for regular first-team football?
Well, there's plenty of argument for a player that is on our books who's scoring goals for a team that's struggling when we can't seem to score any goals with players that are supposed to be experienced international footballers. I don't think we spoke about Samuel before. I don't understand why he's not in or around the side anyway if he's good enough to score goals in League One.
There must be something.
Well, he's not young, is he? Was he 20, 21?
Yeah.
If he's good enough, he should be playing.
Well, he's played in the Premier League.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
He's played up at Newcastle, is it?
Sunderland.
He's played twice, yeah. For us, I think. But yeah. Again, he's not... I don't see why he hasn't been put on the bench.
Yeah, weird one. For me, he only comes in, you only bring him back if you're going to play him every week.
Yeah, it's not a bother. He might as well, he'd develop better at Coventry and he will sat on the bench here, arguably. Yeah. But no one's pulling up trees up front, are they?
Yeah, well, Aaron Tishbowler doing well at Hartlepool as well, and a few other loan players. Craig Tanner doing well at AFC Wimbledon. Keep track of the loan report. That usually goes up on a Wednesday up on the telesn.com for plenty more about them and the other players playing around the league. Elsewhere, Reading have appointed a new head of scouting, guys.
Mm.
Hopefully this one's busier than poor Steve Head, who had 2 years of scouting whoever we played in the FA Cup that week.
Yeah, scouting Anton's phone address book, wasn't it, really?
Pretty much.
Yeah, Zagarevich rather than Ferdinand.
There's Pavel.
didn't they say that Tony Spearin's got a lot of contacts abroad?
He said he was scouting the European leagues.
Yeah, but if you was a head scout, you'd be saying that as well, because you know that's free holidays, don't you? You think that. And there are a lot of people in Spain.
Yeah. There's a player I really like up in Barbados.
And Tenerife.
Just need to go there for the whole of June. No one plays football in June.
I'm not just Europe, but anyway. Either world.
Yeah, I know a lot of Australian players.
just around Ashes time. Tony Spearing's come in. He works with Steve Clark at West Brom. He's also worked at Blackburn as well. He's got a fairly decent track record. Again, I'll direct you over to talisman.com. Mark's written a good little piece detailing some of the signings he's made in the past. So I'd recommend going to head over there. But again, it's a nice sign. I mean, it's a positive step. I mean, if there was no money and the Ties didn't have intentions of signing players, they'd be very doubtful that they'd be bringing in a head of scouting. I know Anton did similar. So it's not a be-all and end-all, but it's a positive sign at least.
Yeah, I was there behind him. And they see him as the long-term... Yeah, the long-term future. I don't think any fans are calling for Steve Clark to be sacked quite yet, but it does show that they're behind him.
Wow.
For... Well, it's been pretty abysmal.
I'm sure some are.
Johnny's the first man on the Clark out bandwagon, by the sounds of it.
I haven't left the Adkins out one yet.
Still on that one.
Just trying to flog that one. But yeah, it shows they're behind him.
Yeah.
At least for the future, anyway.
Don't you think that must be a great job as well?
Head of scouting?
Yeah. I reckon it must be an awesome job. I was listening to Brian McDermott, because he's... at Arsenal now and he's scouting.
Yeah.
And he was saying that like you have a week of going to like Sweden and then Germany and then somewhere else and then have like 5-star hotels and they come back and say, yeah, he's alright.
I just go on Football Manager. Yeah. That's all I'd do.
Do you know what I mean? Well, great job.
Just get the Football Manager database open. Yeah, I like the look of this guy.
Yeah. I suppose though you wouldn't be at it very long if you didn't have an eye for players, because they'd soon suss you out and say, why are you recommending all these duds?
Yeah. Mm. Oh no, there is that. I know you said just a minute ago that someone's done a report on the players that he signed in the past, but I'd like to hear the ones that he signed that are a load of rubbish as well, because let's face it, that list is going to be a lot bigger.
Well, even Brian McDermott had misses. I mean, Brian McDermott was head of scouting when we signed Emers Faye.
Yeah, well, you're going to, aren't you?
I liked Emers Faye. I wish he'd have more of a run in the team.
He was retired about 2 years after leaving Reading, I think.
He looked fast.
I suppose he'd had enough money by then. He'd have to worry.
Yeah.
$2.5 million, well spent, boys. Still our record signing.
But I'm sure it's a great job.
Yeah, so best of luck, Tony. Do you ever fancy being a manager one day, you know? Brian McDermott went from head scout to manager.
Mm.
Used to play football for Leicester.
I just think it's such a cushy number. I wouldn't want to be bothered with being a manager.
Yeah.
Having all the hassle.
Why not?
And people are slating you off and ain't got a clue.
Less pressure. Yeah, signing, blame the manager, don't blame the scout.
That's it.
And one final bit of news points to talk about is the FA Cup quarterfinal tickets. They've nearly gone. There were less than 100 available early Saturday morning. So Reading look like they're going to sell out, Westy. Over 4,200 Reading fans.
Is that the biggest away following since time began?
I think possibly since... I remember they took a load to Highbury, didn't they?
Yeah. Can't really count
that League Cup game.
We must have had a fair few at Southampton and West Ham because they're sort of 35,000 seat stadiums as well. Yeah. So.
But I think that was around 3,000, 3,500.
All right, yeah. Past Birmingham, do you think it's the highest away fans we've ever had, apart from in a
Old Trafford? How many did you give your Old Trafford to St James's Park? Probably the first season we went up to the Premier League.
Yeah.
We had, you know, a fair amount going
even then, though, it's very rare for away fans to get over 4,000 seats. So.
Yeah, it was quite rare.
Anyway.
It's good to
one few statues out there.
Let's hope that they've got something to cheer about because it's a long way to go to watch Reading get beat, isn't it?
Yeah, and we will look ahead to that game a little bit later on. But in the meantime, there's one other bit of news that we're going to cover in pub chat. That was a stewarding incident in the East Stand against Forest. So we'll talk about that next.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Right, welcome back to pub chat. Guys, it's usual for us to cover things that go on the pitch. Very rarely we have to talk about matters going on in the stands, but unfortunately, on Saturday in the game against Forest, there was an incident that caused uproar in the northeast corner. And it takes a lot to stir the feelings of fans in that area of the ground.
Yeah.
I'm sure you won't mind me saying, I think that they'll probably agree, it's a fairly quiet area of the ground. Yeah. But for whatever reason, the basic story is this, from all accounts, there was a fan, possibly two, who were, you know, using some not polite language, shall we say, a little bit abusive language, which quickly turned into them trying to G up fans around them. Fans got into the spirit of things. Swiftly afterwards, some stewards went up to talk to the guys. What was said, I don't know. Some more stewards arrived. Fans started booing, started telling stewards to go away, leave them alone.
That's putting it politely.
Yeah, very politely.
Yeah.
I know what I was telling them to
do. The stewards eventually retreated. The two fans were left until half time. And at half time, there were stewards and police waiting on the concourse and ejected them from the ground. That is what we've heard from the accounts. And again, you can head over to thetarlhurstend.com to read three eyewitness accounts of what was there. But
eyewitness.
We've got one better. Westy, that's the area of the ground that you sit in.
I was very close to this incident.
Can we just confirm it wasn't you getting hoiked?
No, unfortunately it wasn't. I'd have been glad to report that, to be honest. I'd have took that banning.
So, Westy, what did you see?
Well, I'm not close enough to hear what was going on, but what I will say about it is you soon notice that there was something happening because these two guys, and I mean, I don't know where you're sitting exactly in the ground, but there was an atmosphere coming from that part of the ground.
Yeah, I heard something. I thought they were booing a sub or something. Yeah. It was warming up. I just heard something over there.
But the game was quite dull. And to be fair to that area, these two guys, they might have had a few to drink. They might have said a few swear words. Who doesn't? But they were up and they were trying to G the crowd up. And all of a sudden the drums started going. And for about 10 minutes, there was quite a good atmosphere being generated. Now, apparently someone's complained about some of the words they were using. Now, again, I've had my argument with this before. If someone has a swear, fine, have a word for them. But leave it at that. But these guys kept getting up, they kept standing up, and then the stewards gathered round them. And then all of a sudden, it was like the crowd all thought, hang on, you keep complaining about the atmosphere at the ground. These guys, all right, they might be a bit drunk or whatever they're doing. I don't even know they were drunk, to be honest. That was what I thought they might well be chucking them out for. But they got the crowd going. All of a sudden, the fans thought, hang on, why are you chucking these guys out just because they're standing up? And then they gathered around more and more and more. And then everyone started standing up and sort of backing them. And it did generate a great atmosphere. And I must admit, I spent 20 minutes just watching what was going on. It was great. And then it died down and the stewards went to boos and jeers. And it sent a bit of a pantomime, to be fair. And I said to my dad, I said, you can see them. Because there was in all the concourses, they kept putting their head up above the parapet to see where this guy was. And I said to my dad, as soon as he goes downstairs, they're going to grab him and he'll be out. And from what I heard, that's what happened. But there was a few guys that come up to the pub afterwards and they said somebody, and again, these are unsubstantiated stories and I don't know if they're true, but they said what happened was when they got taken out of the ground, a guy went up to one of the stewards and he got pushed over, although he was just defending them. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. Again, I don't know this, I'm not sure, but that's what I was told. And that caused quite a furore in the concourse as well because they thought it was a bit unjust. But the point of the whole thing is that this is what I complain about all the time with the steward at Reading. It's not the yellow jackets, it's the orange jackets, right, that are obviously in charge. It is way too over-the-top stewarding. There's no need to be telling everyone. And there were some lads in front of me, so I just changed stories all of a sudden. There were some lads in front of me a few weeks back. The same thing happened to them. They were a bit lively. They were shouting about. Someone complained about them. Now, I was sat probably 10 seats back, and I heard things they were saying. They weren't bothering me. One person complained. Stewart came up, and he told them, no uncertain terms, if they got up again, he was going to be dragging them out of the ground. And they were young lads, 15, 16-year-olds. You think, well, don't tell fans to create an atmosphere. And then when someone tries, you're saying sit down or we're dragging him out.
Playing devil's advocate though, is there not an argument to say that if these lads were using abusive language. And I think multiple reports have said they were using some words that...
They might have been.
If you are using those sort of words and somebody complains because they're like, they might be there with their kid or whatever, and it's an area of the ground that, let's be honest, it's not associated with that type of behaviour. So if you buy your ticket, you've got a fairly general assumption that, you know, it's not going to, you're not going to hear that type of language, etc. If someone's going to complain to a steward, and these fans have continued to flaunt that, is there not an argument to say that the stewards should have chucked them out?
No, and I'll tell you why, because as far as I'm concerned, if one person complains, there's a thousand that haven't.
But does that...
That's like me saying, right, you sat there and you supported your club by sitting there and not saying a word, not cheering, not getting involved, not clapping your hands. I find that offensive, because I think if you're here to support them, support them. But I'm going to go up to the steward and say, actually, mate, he's there, he's not even supporting the club, so why is he
doing you
it?
Don't know, to that point there, you don't know that, just because only one person's complained, you don't know that another 200 haven't been quite offended or upset by hearing people use abusive language.
It's a football match. You're not at the library. You're not at the restaurant.
And I agree with you, but isn't there an argument to say, if you want to have that sort of atmosphere and you want to use that sort of language, go to Y25, Y26, where you will barely ever see anybody told to stop it.
But is that why they were kicked out? Was it for foul?
We don't know.
Because I've heard stewards say before, you can't stand up due to health and safety. Now, my argument with that is, well, what about half time when everyone stood up and we're walking around with drinks? Or what about when the rugby's there, when everyone's stood up on the concourse, well, stood everywhere, drinking beer and walking around? What difference does it make?
You make the point about move to Y26. Well, everyone in Y26 stands up, don't they, for most of the game. I think it was a bit of a battle over the last couple of years over in Y26 that fans were saying, we want to stand up, and the stewards kept telling people to sit down and ushering a few people out. But, I mean, I'd have 2 points to make on this. The first one is, we're not privy to the conversation that the stewards and the people who got thrown out had. If it was along the lines of, if you stand up one more time, you're getting thrown out, then fair enough. But obviously then, why would the stewards throw them out anyway at halftime? The second one is, if you're going to buy a ticket, you don't... If you bought a season ticket for the first season this year, I'm not saying it's the first season they've had it, but how are they going to know? Are they going to go to the box office, ticket office, and say, right, I'd like you to put me in a place where I can stand up, I can swear, I can shout, I can sing, I can do what I want, or, in fact, actually, can you put me in a place that doesn't necessarily have that sort of atmosphere, I can just sit and enjoy the game with my kids? That's not an option you necessarily get when you're buying your ticket or when you are buying your season ticket for the game. I don't know if it's the first time it's happened for them, but I personally think that they were probably a bit harshly treated, because it didn't look like the stewards gave them that sort of final warning of, right, if you do this one more time, you're getting thrown out. Yeah. I'm not privy to that conversation, I'm only speculating.
From what I see, these guys argued their point, and okay, someone's complained, fine. But there was quite a lot of people, and quite half the stand, or probably the whole of the stand, supported these guys in the fact they thought, wait there, no, why should he be told what he can and can't do at a football match? You know what I mean? He's not in a restaurant, he's not in a library. I take my kids to football. I'll be honest with you, their swearing goes on. My boys know that their swearing goes on at football, but don't mean you do it. You know what I mean? Doesn't mean you copy it. And I swear at football, I do it all the time. I'll be first to admit it.
If one or two stewards had gone out, you know, I don't profess to have a safety or health certificate or whatever, but you'd imagine if one or two of them went up and said, look, we've had a couple of complaints, just try and keep it down, we like the atmosphere, whatever, just don't swear, don't stand up, don't be too rowdy, then that's absolutely fine. But it just seemed, you know, I was sitting on the West Stand and there must have been, what, 10, 15 of them all just standing like in a queue waiting to frog march them out of the stadium. It just looked a complete mess.
I thought it was disgusting, to be honest. And I remember when I started the show 5-6 years ago now, when we'd done that experiment in the top corner, they said you can have G1, is it, or in the top corner.
The Berkshire boys.
Yep. And there was about 20 of us, and we were surrounded after 5 minutes. Surrounded. Mm. For nothing. Just supporting the side. Never saying, no, sit down, this is family area. And we thought, well, you put us here. You told them to come and sit here. And given them, we had incidents where people were getting dragged into the concourse. And
the club need to do more to make that group that's, say, between the ages of, say, 21 and 50... They need to give them a space where they can be that. But, and again, I would argue that that area does exist. It does exist in Y25 and Y26, where it is a far more softly approach taken to stewarding. And I think it has got better. And I think, you know, I've had a season ticket there for 3 or 4 seasons now in that particular area. And I have noticed a much more relaxed approach from the stewards. So I don't think it's fair for us to say all the stewards are getting it completely wrong. I think, personally, I think they possibly got this a little bit wrong on Saturday, but I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, the stewarding's awful. Mm. All the stewards, you know, need training and whatnot.
Again, I'm not sure. Again, it only takes one or two. The ones that are in charge, that's the problem. But they're not police, and I think they think they're only that they are. And all they had to do is have a word with these guys. Even at half-time, even if they went at half-time and said, look, support the club the way you want, but please just tone the language down a little bit. You know what I mean? Mm. Fine. I think most people would have been like, all right, okay. Because you get carried away with things. I mean, I'd swear at football, but it's just because you get carried away. You know what I mean? Mm. You're not doing it constantly.
Everyone deserves a warning, don't they? Everyone deserves a warning and a chance. Especially because Johnny says, these fans might have thought, oh, well, this is a... The East Stand has always been talked about as the main rowdy stand. I'm going to go there. And again, it's very important to stress here, we don't know exactly what's been said between the stewards and the fans. We don't know how many people complained or why they complained. At the moment, the football club haven't put out any statements. So at the moment, we're just going off what's the accounts of people.
Yeah, I'm not interested in what the club got to say anywhere, because I've noticed the stewarding for months and years that's got gradually worse. But what I would be interested in is hearing the account from the guy who was kicked out and what was said to him.
Yeah.
And if he was, he might even come on him and say to us, you know what, hands up, I think I was a bit out of order, I got a bit carried away. Fine, he might well do. But any statement from the club, I'm really not interested in.
Okay, well, if you are that person or persons who were booted out, by all means, send us an email to thetarlestent@gmail.com. We'll do our very best to get it up on the site and to read it out on this very podcast. Westy, there is a petition going around that some fans signed. Had around 300 signatures at the time that we're recording, saying that the football club should apologise for the conduct. Do you think a petition is the right way to go about it?
Petitions don't do nothing. It's like nowadays, like I'm going to send someone a strong email. That don't get you anywhere. You're wasting your time. Bring back the 80s.
I have a hard time signing that at the moment because you don't know the full story. And this is just my personal opinion. Until you know both sides of the story, I have a hard time.
I agree with you, but take out that incident. Again, this is prolonged amount of incidents I've seen down the years when I thought, you know what? If I come to support my club, who are you to tell me to do this, to do that? As long as I'm not causing anyone any danger, then where's there a problem? You know when you're out of order yourself. And if he was out of order, fine. But it's not just that one incident you've got to be in. I said last week that the stewarding was bad, and then the week after, the stewarding was bad. I haven't made this up.
Don't know. I'm going to stick up for him a little bit because, I mean, how many times have we had to talk about this on this show? We've been in this show for two seasons now, and I think this is probably the first time there's ever been a serious...
Like I said a couple of minutes ago, in Y26, I mean, you sit there always used to be stewards coming up and telling people to sit down. And
constant pitch battles.
And I get the view directly across from that. And in the last couple of... probably this season, maybe the season before as well, there haven't been that. Yeah. So clearly the stewards are sort of learning a little bit.
Or have they not been that because they've killed it so much that people were too frightened to even get up and try and sing?
No, they do. They stand.
They're just going to get kicked out.
No, they stand. They still sing. There's still songs with naughty words in.
There's still a few Forest fans as well.
Yeah, a Forest fan booted out of Y26. Waving his scarf as he went. My question is, why did he sit there? Because there were empty seats in the Forest End.
See, I saw a little in the West End. There was probably a 10-year-old boy with a Forest shirt and a Forest hat on. I thought, oh, he's a little bit of trouble, isn't he? Yeah, why aren't the stewards having a go on him?
But there's no. I've got no problem
there
with. I've got no problem with the way fans.
I was joking, West
End. No, throw him out.
I've got no problem with the way fans sitting in home end as long as you don't celebrate. I've sat in the home end for Reddit.
My mate sat with me this week. He's a Leeds fan, and he did celebrate because
he was a Leeds fan sitting with you for the Forest game.
For the Leeds game, he sat with me, and he did celebrate when they scored, which I thought fair enough. But why? If there's a mate, if he's 26 of a Forest top on, we kick him out. Yeah.
Now apparently he was celebrating.
If he's 10, we keep him in. Mm. That's ageist. You can't do that with our stewards. All out, that's what I'm saying.
Right.
He looked like a troublemaker as well. Hasn't he?
He's a troublemaker of the future.
Yeah. Well, as I said, I mean, you can go onto
testing the waters.
You can go onto thetarlestend.com to read the accounts of some people who are around the area. There's also a couple of people who left comments in the comments section. Delighted to hear from you in that comment section if you've got thoughts on it. As I said, head over to thetarlestend.com. The article's still up fairly near the top of the main page as we record. So plenty of reason for you to go there. Also, as I said, there hasn't been an official word from the club yet. As soon as there is, we'll publish that. And if, as I said, if you are the fan affected, please get in touch with us and we'll do our very best to get your story out.
Can we get the steward affected as well?
No, in all seriousness, if you're the steward that was tasked with throwing this guy out and you've got an opinion on it, more than happy to hear it.
Come on, if you dare.
That's not a threat from Westy.
What we'll do, we'll get him on the show and then we'll kick him out. Stand it up.
The minute he starts swearing.
Your voice too high.
Well, that's it. Yeah. How you go, mate?
Right, we've got some more tweets and emails from that in the mailbag, so we'll move on to that now.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
Right, welcome to the mailbag. You just heard the contact details, but I'll rattle them off again. At the Tarlhurst End is our Twitter, thetarlhurstend@gmail.com is for your emails, and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend is another way for you to get your message to us, and we will read them out in this very section. Starting with a few on the stewarding issue, Craig Beasley says, can fans not sing in the soulless bowl anymore? The whole club stinks at the moment. Take me back to Elm Park. Well, you can go back to Elm Park, but I don't know if the residents who live there will be particularly happy.
I'm sure they'll be complaining if you start effing and jeffing and singing at half 9 at night.
Yeah, come on, have some respect. I don't know what to say. Soulless bowl?
Yeah, he's right. It is soulless.
You call it that.
I don't know if it's...
The soulless bowl.
I don't know if it's
it's
soulless.
It's got a ring to it, hasn't it?
I don't know if it's soulless, but no, it's not exactly rocking. Jeff Hallett says, is safe standing at the top of the stand the solution to matched atmospheres? Those who want to sit wouldn't have restrictive views and Stuart's job would be easier. Back the boys and get thrown out, currently.
That's it. Well, it wouldn't be easier. And the reason they don't have them is because if you haven't got a seat, they don't know who you are.
Yep.
Ooh.
That's true.
Well, no, it is. It's true. I mean, it's easy.
If you don't have a seat and you can move about,
yeah,
they don't know who you are, so they can't throw you out.
Mm.
If you're seeing a big crowd, like in the 80s, when I started going football as a kid, you could say what you wanted because it could come from anywhere. No one knew what it was. But now they know exactly where you sit.
But there is a positive side to that. Obviously, if fans are using, you know, say, for example, racist or homophobic language.
Oh, well, yeah.
I mean, it's good. I mean, the fans can then, you know, they can't hide.
Yeah,
exactly.
Enough.
So, I mean, it does have a positive side to it. I'm one for unrestricted seating in a certain area. I think you should be allowed. But obviously... safe standing is a story that's in the press fairly regularly. Obviously, the Football Supporters Federation are very keen to bring it in.
It won't happen.
Don't think?
No. No chance.
I'm hopeful it will be. I think it will take one club to do it. I think one club needs to be bold and go for it.
I don't think the Premier League would want to go for it.
No.
I think it would happen maybe lower down the ladder, but I don't think the
Premier
League
maybe lower down the ladder it might.
Yeah. Well, we'll watch this space. John Keane has done a series of a good pieces on the website on safe standing, so maybe I'll throw one back up on the front page. All I will say to that, Jeff, is that, again, you can go to Y25, Y26, and there are plenty of tickets available at the moment, I can tell you that right now. you can go there, you can generally stand up. Obviously, I don't think legally you're allowed to do so, or I don't think it's a law, it's the stadium regulations, but at the moment, people are just standing throughout the game, so...
Could we just have a word on the attendance? 18,300?
Yeah, where'd they get them numbers from?
Mm.
Well, it's number of tickets sold, isn't it? Not people in the actual ground.
Well, mind their accountant.
Well, it's a lot of people that have bought season tickets and just can't
not
be bothered.
Yeah, well, I don't blame them.
Well, I've missed two of the last three games because I've been working and I probably could have. I would have only got about 2 hours sleep, but... Well,
you got plenty of sleep when you turned up.
Yeah, true.
Go to the game for a nap.
And Nathaniel Knight says, what's your opinion on noise at the Mad Stad and Stuart's reactions at the weekend? Well, you've heard our reaction to the stewards. Noise at the Mad Stad, I don't think it's any...
It goes hand in hand with what you're seeing on the pitch.
Yeah, we said this last week, didn't it? If you've got nothing to cheer about, it's very difficult to cheer.
So when, you know, when there's a surge forward and we nearly hit the post or whatever, end of the first half,
there's noise.
Yeah. When you're playing well... The crowd gets behind you, and it's even more rare that that happens these days.
I thought the Reading crowd done their best to lift that team until they basically went 2-0 down and that killed everybody.
It's a bit of a side point, but are you slightly worried about, not worried, but have you noticed how there's not that many songs anymore for players?
There's nothing.
But no, I'm just talking generally. I'm not talking about the amount of noise. I'm just saying a lot of players don't even have a song anymore.
I think just generally football fans are a lot less witty these days. All it is I want to go home, this place is a hole.
Yeah,
and then we go back to your hole.
But then that comes from standing, do you know what I mean? Because you had your group, didn't you? You had your 10, 12, and then one would do something and the rest would all join in. Whereas now, you do it on your own and someone says, "Oh, I'm kicking here. Can you be quiet and get out?"
Trying to read it.
Yeah, exactly.
Some
yeah.
waits over in a jacket.
Oh, I think somebody's sworn there, and I'm going to report you. You know, calm yourself down. Well, what they should do is make sure everyone's drunk when they turn up. That would roll things up lovely.
Like to say,
how old you are.
Alan West's views do not reflect those of the Tarlest End.
If everyone was a bit lively, it'd cheer everyone up a bit, I think. But no.
Do we have to start introducing drinkaware? Yeah, I'm sure we do. As well as gambleware.
I think we should start introducing drink. Well, I did a couple of weeks
be
ago.
Be everything aware.
You know what I'm saying, though? I think, like, in Germany, you can drink during a match.
Yeah.
Football is the only sport where you can't drink.
Yeah, but what?
Well, we're still paying for for the mistakes of fans 30 years ago, aren't we?
Yeah, but it's disgraceful. Don't you think? I think it's bad. Because you can have the same amount of people at a rugby match. Pretty much the same people half the time.
And they're not even segregated, most of the time.
They're not even segregated.
It's double standards, certainly.
Again, I've said it a million times. If you're in a ground and you want to drink, all you'll do is bang it back quicker because you know the first half's coming. You know what I mean? At half time, you bang one back and you go back upstairs. You're probably more drunk than you would be if you had one to drink.
From the club's point of view, though, the same number of fans are turning up whether they can drink throughout the game or not. I mean, if you're Arsenal, you're standing at a stadium whether you can drink or not. And for their point of view, they're probably thinking, well, last thing we want is one or two to get too drunk and start causing problems. I'm not going to change the rules.
Yeah, but they're more likely to get drunk because they're having to bang drinks back rather than... I'll tell you what, there's no way a steward would chuck me out for swearing or do anything wrong if I had a beer sat by me, because I'd be pretty quiet because I wouldn't want to spill it. It's like liquid gold. It's £4 a pint.
I think we need to run a campaign for you to set the FIFA presidency.
Yeah, maybe. But I don't see why it hurts. You don't drink any less or more. You just don't drink during the match.
I don't know.
You're making me want to drink then.
Yeah. I think if you've got unlimited access to booze at the game, I think you would drink more.
Well, obviously you're talking about yourself, Quinn, but some of us can control our drinking.
Yeah, but if you've got a 3-hour spell to be drinking as opposed to an hour and 15 minutes, I think you're going to knock back more.
I think you'd see a lot more people bringing those backpacks that you can hold beer in.
Camel packs.
And the old hats as well.
I think you'd buy one in the first half, drink it through the first half, get one at half time, drink it through the second half.
Yeah, but you're talking about your drinking habits. You don't know, what about these lads? The lads.
Yeah, but why should they be stopped doing what they want? If they get too rowdy, you kick them out anyway, so does it really matter? I don't understand where the point lies.
I'm mostly playing devil's advocate. I've got, again, like you said, rugby and cricket, they do it. Every other sport, they do
NFL.
It.
NFL at Wembley.
Yeah. NFL, yeah.
I've been to cricket, come out steamboats, but it didn't cause me no trouble.
As I said, all I'm saying is that the rules at the moment have kept trouble down. So the clubs are probably just going to say, well, what's in it for us?
More revenue.
Good point. I can't say any more than that.
Anyway, it wasn't what
anyway,
was about,
yeah. Right, let's move on. We've got an absolutely full mailbag. Right. Just quietly, one before we leave on the atmosphere point. Handbags.
Oh, good.
As yeah. Tweeted.
I'm sure it should be very
sensitive. He says, he's responded to another tweet, but nod to the chap who mentioned pre-match atmospherics. Utterly cringeworthy for Reading Football Club.
It was.
Yeah. We need to talk about this guy.
Johnny.
We need to talk about
the pre-match announcer was different this week.
Yeah, let Johnny do what he done when he came in here before we start recording, because I thought that was brilliant. It summed it up beautifully.
Okay, well, basically, about 10 minutes before, I'd sort of describe this as something like the FA Cup final presented by Tony Blackburn.
Yeah, it was like that.
It was about 10 minutes before. Well, the players are in the tunnel. This is 15 minutes before kickoff, so they're not in the tunnel. They're going to get a bit cold. Let's hear from the Forest fans, and they sort of give a hooray. Now let's hear from the Reading, the men and the women, the boys and the girls, the mums and the dads for the biscuit men.
It was like Butlins, wasn't it?
Yeah.
This wasn't the bat the boys make some noise guy. No. This was the guy who was up in the booth playing the records.
And to me, it just sounded like he had absolutely no knowledge of football, because he got the team sheet out. He said, let's read out the team news for Nottingham Forest wearing the number one shirt, Carl Darlow. In number two is this one. And wearing number three today is this player. And I was just like, I just felt absolutely so embarrassed.
Even though
he called the assistant referees referee one and referee two, and he didn't even know their first names. He just said it was like A West and D Wimbush. I was just like, oh, come on.
I thought it was brilliant. I think bring it back. It was so cringeworthily bad. That
yeah,
I
it was so bad it was good. It's Partridge-esque.
No, it was not good.
The thing I got from it is I'd come in sort of 10 minutes before the game started, and as I was coming up, he was doing his spill. Yeah. And I think it was the players who were in the tunnel.
Yeah. Like, well, they're not.
No, there wasn't. But as I was walking up there, there was these 10 blokes absolutely cracking up over this announcer. And I thought, wow, if the game's bad, at least we've had a laugh about that.
That's what I mean. I've got no problem with it. It was funny.
I mean, the Way fans are going to love it. They're going to think that's great.
Yeah,
it might generate an atmosphere just from taking the mick out.
It just made me feel embarrassed to be a Reading fan. Yeah. Otherwise, this is what we do. And the other thing he was doing, he was they have the cameraman who looks around, tries to find people to give us away, that sort of thing. He was commentating on that. He was like, "Oh, this guy's eating a pie. Is he having a good time?" And this guy was just sat there.
He should have chucked it.
I just want to eat my pie. I don't want to be on telly. Go away.
It was bad. Yeah. But I did quite enjoy it.
Still, he was more insane than anything we saw on the pitch.
It was.
So, I'm not sure.
Thanks for that, Handbags. I'm sure he'll be on the show again in the near future. Moving on to some more general tweets about the game and the season. I said a full mailbag, so I'll try and get through these as many as quickly as possible. Will Freeman says, "I don't think we should judge our league performances until after next Saturday. Played okay against an informed Forest who had two moments of magic. Hopefully fans are more able to back the boys at home so we can actually improve our awful home form." Stacey says, "Our problem lies with the way our midfield plays, allow teams to play and doesn't push forward to support the forward line." And thoughts on those two?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't really touch on the two Forest goals. Well, the two brilliant ones. I mean, the first one, absolutely sensational. Yeah. The third one, I don't know whether Federici was a bit far out. And the second one, as I said, it happened a couple of times before they actually scored. Antonio, just between the midfield, who pushed foot too far forward in the defence, runs at the defence, passes it straight to the guy. Pierce has got absolutely no chance.
That was it.
It was just a team that, we're 1-0 down, we need to push forward. And they were just too reckless.
One positive out of that game, it made my quip earlier in the season about Forest being promotion candidates slowly coming back.
Yeah, you'd see some.
Played the long game.
Yeah, see some.
We knew they were going to go through that slump. I agree about the midfield playing. Again, I think the midfield's been a problem all season. I don't think they've ever quite got that centre pairing right. Or if we should even be playing a pairing, should it be a three? Don't know. Do you buy anything into this? They're distracted by the FA Cup?
No, not really. It shouldn't be.
I don't think so. I think they know who the best 11 players are. They probably know they're going to be on the pitch. We need him.
Yeah.
He hasn't been playing necessarily an FA Cup side, has he?
No.
No.
Speaking of the FA Cup, Darren Collins says, "Would winning the FA Cup be consolation for relegation if it came to it?"
I'll take winning the FA Cup and get relegated.
I don't want to see us relegated.
It's not going to happen. Either of them won't happen anyway, but if you had a choice, if you won the FA Cup and got relegated, reminds me of the Simo Cup. They got relegated that year as well, so...
Be a League One team in Europe, that'd be.
You'd have the great feeling of glory afterwards. But I mean, would that make up for, say, if Reading struggled in League One for 7-8 years? Would that make up for it?
Very difficult to come straight back up.
I mean, it'd be really interesting to hear from Portsmouth fans now about whether they think
collapsed, didn't they?
But there's no guarantee that Reading wouldn't do the same if they got relegated.
Yeah, there's no guarantee. But again, it's speculation. Neither of them are going to happen, so I shouldn't worry about it too much.
Sean Berry, "Aaron Tischbowler calls on more youngsters to exit the under-21 league for the Football League experience. Who should we send out?" I think we've covered this before. I think anybody really.
It's all of them.
Yeah. Mm. I want to see Aaron Cole play a bit more, but apart from that, anyone can go.
Well, he could be playing for us next year.
Yeah.
I'd like to see him play for us next year.
Yeah, me too. I'd like to see him given a chance anyway. Certainly, the players, that promising crop of players we saw at the very start of the season, they're only going to be better at the start of next season.
Yeah, and they didn't do a lot wrong to be bombed out completely, did they?
No.
Let's face it.
It was only because more experienced and higher paid players came back.
Yeah.
Hugh says, "Does it seem that Reading have to play down the right at the moment as Hal Robson Canu drifts inside far too often, leaving a beater isolated?"
Again, we covered that. Yeah, all our attacks come down the right.
It must be, it's tactical rather than Hal Robson Canu has no positional sense.
Yeah, it must be. He wouldn't be straying so far away.
Yeah, you wouldn't have thought so, no.
Neil says, "I'd bring back Samuel on, play him. Cox has never been prolific and the Yak doesn't have it. Play him with the Pog and it would bring some much needed pace. I'd like to see it."
I'm not sure how quick he is, Samuel.
Well, if you saw his first goal against Sheffield United the other week, look it up on YouTube or in our loan report. Great turn of pace to get away, and a bit of strength as well to get away from his defender. The only thing is, obviously, it's a league below. going up against a really experienced team like Forest or something, is he going to have the same joy? Yeah. But at this point in the season, I don't think you've got anything to lose. So I'd bring him back and play him, as I said.
I think once they're safe, if it doesn't take too long, then I don't see any problem with playing them, because you might as well.
Yeah. Moving on to Gary Woodward, who says, we just need the season to end ASAP, then hope for a decent recruitment, adequate funding from the Thai owners. Chris Hartley says, today, like Tuesday, shows how much our squad needs to be overhauled come the summer. Again.
Can't argue much with that, no.
No, can't argue. Both very fair points. I think we're all just waiting for May, really. For the cup final, obviously.
Yeah.
And for the end of the season. Right, a few questions on recruitment. Starting with Cass Fox, he says, how many players do you expect from that starting 11 and bench to be here after the summer window? John Hyde, on a similar note, says, who for the Reading squad do you think are dead certs to be playing for the club after the summer? And Chris Hartley, again, says, out of the current squad, which players would you look to build a team around? So all sort of similar questions, really.
It needs freshening up.
Well, let's very quickly then run through that starting lineup and say whether you think they'll be here at the start of next season. Federici?
No, but I hope he is.
No.
I'm going to say, like Johnny, no, but I hope he is. Jordan Abita? Yeah, yes. Yeah. Alex Pearce?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure.
I don't think we've got enough centre-backs not to be keeping
the... I don't know if they'll offer him the same sort of wages.
No, they probably won't. But no one will offer him that because he's not good enough.
Yeah, I mean, he eventually signed for us again last time, didn't he?
Mm. I think Reading, again, we spoke about this, but I think Reading should chance their armour players like Pearce and that. Say, wow, you're not getting that money, so it's up to you.
Okay, well, it's a cautious yes for me, maybe. Michael Hector, yeah.
Definitely.
Chris Gunter?
Yep,
definitely.
Yep. Chalobah?
No.
Danny Williams?
Yep.
Gareth McCleary?
Yep. Yeah.
I'm going to say no, I think someone's going to buy him.
I don't think, judging by his performance over the last 3 months, anyone would even consider buying him for big money.
I still think someone might take a punt.
Look at his end product. I know you did last week. Look at what his actual end product.
Yeah, it's poor.
He doesn't get nearly the amount of jeers or whatever when he puts in a bad cross.
Now, it's only since you mentioned it, I've actually watched him, and his crossing is dreadful.
His product's bad, but he does create moments of excitement. There were several times where he burst through past several players.
Don't get me wrong, on his day, he's brilliant. Like most wingers, their days are few and far between sometimes.
I will be fair to him, I think he's playing with an injury.
Yeah, Charles said on the podcast section on Friday, he suspects he's still got a bit of a niggle.
Yeah, he didn't.
He hasn't played two games in a week, has he?
No,
he has this week.
It's not before this week.
Yeah.
He won't play on Tuesday night against Bolton.
He's a good player, but if you've come and you're saying, right, what can we get for sort of, you're going to ask 3-4 million, I would have thought, because he's got 3-year contract and he's still young. If you go out 3-4 million and you go and watch him, if you're a scout and you've watched him over the last 3 minutes, you're thinking, nah.
How old is Canoe?
I hope not.
Plus one on that,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to say no. I'm going to say they're going to move him on. Pavel Pogrebniak?
Well, he will be.
No one's going to pay his wages, so he's a definite.
Simon Cox?
Yeah, it'd be a...
Yeah.
Mikael Anderson?
Yeah.
I think he's out of contract, so I think no.
Unless he's going to be first choice, yeah. Again, and Guthrie and players like that, they're all going to get shipped out.
Stephen Kelly?
Shipped out.
No point. I'd Danny, if he wanted low enough wages.
Yeah, if he wanted dead cheap wages, I'd keep him as a backup. But I don't. This is who you think will be here, and I don't think he will be.
If he's going to accept £10 a week, I'll keep him.
Danny Guthrie?
No, he's gone.
No. Hope Akpan?
Yep.
Yeah, again, who's going to take him?
Nick Blackman?
Yeah.
I hope not. I'm done.
He's still got a bit of potential.
Done with him.
Yak's still got potential. He's got potential.
No. Any chance of seeing Yak here next season? No.
He's only 25, so.
Yeah, the players that aren't playing, Jem Karachan?
Yeah, I think he will.
Who knows?
He's probably on decent money at the moment. That'll be my only reservation.
But that means no one else will want to take a risk on him, I don't think.
No. Yeah. Things we're talking about really needing a freshen up, and we've pretty much kept everyone.
No, not everyone.
Yeah, but my argument for that is that if you inject quality into the squad around those players will be better. Alex Pearce hasn't gone from being player of the season, helping us win promotion, to awful. No.
You just need... Yeah, you're right. You just need to freshen up with 3 or 4 faces.
And I've written a very long article on it, talking about how stale this era is. If you've got competition and you've got exciting players playing around you, it lifts you. Look how Roberts coming in lifted that squad.
Yeah, I did. He made average players brilliant.
Yeah.
And Upson years ago when he came in, he made an average team look like world beaters. Mm.
So these players individually aren't bad. I just think that the whole makeup and chemistry together, it's just bad.
Yeah, it's just something not right at the moment.
Yeah. Right, let's move on. Johnny Harris says, why isn't Norwood playing much at the moment? He's our best passer, set piece taker and creator. He must play at Bradford.
I don't think that pitch would suit Norwood. Do you? I think you need to put all the cloggers in. your Akpans and your Mackies are just going to battle and kick everyone. Because you ain't going to be able to play football on that pitch.
That's, yeah. I think that's the thing, is Clark prefers his two in the middle to be battlers rather than passers.
Yeah, well, let's go on then and talk about Bradford as well as the Bolton game on Tuesday and any other business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any other business.
Right, talking back to any other business. Before we come on to Bradford, we'll quickly talk about the Bolton game. Tuesday night trip away from home. Doesn't usually spell success for Reading. I think we've won one out of the last seven. I'll have a sneaky little stats piece up on that on Monday. But yeah, we're awful away in midweek games.
Yep.
You see any potential for a win?
No.
Yep. Oh, sod it, you may as well. Probably will now.
Yeah, only so. Judging by the absolute usual feeling of as soon as we're bad, we're good.
And you know what? The consistency of being inconsistent is so consistent.
Yeah.
Well, that's the Steve Clark mantra.
Well, you've already done your predictions by the looks of this sheet, Wim.
Yeah, I have for Bolton. Obviously, Admiral Fondra's going to bag a load of goals against us.
He scored a penalty.
Antonio did this. They're week. A team that are one place above us. Obviously, they picked up under Neil Lennon, had a bit of a wobble recently. They won at the weekend. We don't really have a lot of joy at the Macron Stadium or Reebok or whatever it wants to be called. So, he's going to change the side, isn't he? But would you, though? Mick Gooding was asked a question on Berkshire, who said, would you keep that side out there to say that you need to prove to me if you want to play at Bradford?
I'd make two or three changes, I think, just to freshen it up a little bit. Not make six, because I think then you've just got absolutely no teamwork whatsoever. I'd put Mackie in for McCleary, just give McCleary a rest. I might think about resting Pog, because he's had a long few weeks. And Clark probably won't do it, but I'd drop Treloba and say, look, you are not guaranteed a place in this team just because you come from Chelsea and just because you're my mate. Well, you know, just because I brought you in from there.
Yeah, I think I reckon he'll rest McCleary. He's bound to.
Do you know what I'd rest? I'd rest Michael Hector. I'd put Jake Cooper in for a game.
Yeah.
Again, I think he needs a bit of a... I think just a game out of the firing line.
The thing is with Cooper, I would play him against Bradford because he's a goal threat. He's a big, strong goal threat. Yeah. And I think you're going to have to play that way there. You know, from corner set pieces, we ain't going to score against Bradford. But if you've got a big player like that up front, he might get you a goal.
Yeah.
So he's worth a game for that.
So yeah, finalising thoughts on Bolton. Yeah, a couple of changes. But I want to see that team. No, I'd play Chello and Williams and I'd say, you've got to prove you're in or else you're out for Bradford.
You're out, yeah.
Same for Simon Cox as well.
Well, all of them. You can't just not pick them to.
Okay, right, let's do predictions then.
It's not a home game, is it? You put home in there.
It's just formatting game for the spreadsheet, Johnny.
Homer.
Stop pulling the curtain back.
Right.
In terms of prediction league, going into this game, Wesley, I still need to add a point to you.
I'm on a great run.
Yeah, you've correctly got the right... you're one goal away from getting the actual score right. You predicted a 3-1 Forest win.
You thought Reading would score.
Yeah, I know. How embarrassing is that?
Yeah. Me and Charles predicted wins and Johnny predicted a draw, so we were all wrong. So the standings get into this one. I'm on 19, Johnny's on 18, Westy, you're on 13.
Yes.
And Charles sneaks to the bottom of the table at on 12.
Charles
without a correct result since Norwich at home. So I think that's 2015 without a correct result for Charles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Step
the old game up.
Like I said to you guys off air, I'm stopped betting on this with my heart. I'm going to use my head and I've got two right on the bounce. Told you?
XL aware.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Score prediction then on the podcast extra. Charles has gone for a 2-0 Bolton win and I've gone for a draw.
3-1 Bolton. I like my 3-1s earlier in the season. They brought me some joy, so I'm bringing them back.
Westy.
I was going to do 2-0 as well if I do the same.
Yeah, you can. 2-0 yeah. Bolton, is
2-0
that?
2-0 Bolton, yeah.
Right, so should Reading fails get a result, you cannot blame anyone on this podcast. We've all correctly predicted doom.
If anything, it might work in our favour, the fact we've gone against them this
time. Well, usually does.
Mm.
Are you just going to copy Charles now so you don't finish last? Now that you're ahead of him.
No. Negative.
I'm going to win this. I told you I'm going to win this.
The Bradford game... Then that doesn't count for the prediction league, so we'll leave the prediction league there. But Bolton, I mean, do you base your team on Tuesday or do you stick what on paper is the best team out? Which, again, for me, I think is probably that team we saw on Saturday. As bad as it actually was in execution. But.
It probably will. Yeah, I probably will stick with what he thinks is the best team.
I think you might drop Cox and bring someone else in.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know who. Maybe Blackman. I'm sticking by him. I'd put Blackman in.
No. Just no.
My opinion.
Gives you a bit of legs, I suppose. I don't know. I don't think Cox is doing enough.
Gives you someone who's actually going to have a shot.
Yeah, I don't think Cox is doing enough to hold his place down, that's for certain.
Needed to bury those chances, I'm afraid, on Saturday.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Are we going to win this? Let's be honest. Come on.
Yeah. I genuinely think we're going to draw.
You think you're going to get a draw? Johnny?
Yeah. Then we'll have to create some atmosphere at the Madstad.
Oh, don't do that. She'll be out.
I reckon we'll win.
You think we're going to win?
I think we will.
You think we're going to Wembley?
Yeah. Which actually is probably going to cost more than going to Bradford. I managed to find some train tickets to Bradford for £45. So, lovely stuff.
One of the travelling horde.
Yeah.
How do I see this? My head says we're going to win. My heart, simply because, obviously, as previously mentioned on this show, I'm getting married on the day of the semi-final.
They've one of the semi-finals.
Yeah, even getting away on the Sunday is a tricky proposition.
I think not.
Depends what time the kickoff is. If it's a 12 o'clock kickoff, I think I'm up against
it. It's the old famous story, like my daddy went to football on his wedding day and he met my mum at reception afterwards. Got married in the morning, went to football and then come back in the evening. And he said to me, start as you mean to go on, son. And he's done it ever since.
Yeah, the future Mrs. Wimbush would not permit such antics from me. But no, we should win this game. I said a couple of weeks ago, I think Bradford might take half a step off the gas because they will go into this game against a team thinking they're awful in the league at the moment. Yeah. We've beaten Chelsea, we've beaten Sunderland. We should have these boys.
A lot of their fans think they're already in the semi-finals.
Yeah. And also, they're in pretty patchy form in the league themselves. They're not doing particularly well at the moment. Their playoff challenge is stumbling.
They're a poor side as well, they ain't.
There is no reason on paper Reading should not get through this game. Paper counts for little, as we our prediction league show.
But I
think we're going to win. If I had to make a prediction for the prediction league, I'd be predicting Reading to win. But it's FA Cup. Anything can happen. Cliche, but it's true.
It is cliche.
It's the magic of the FA Cup.
I think it's been a great competition this year.
It would just sum up the season, though.
As a Reading fan.
As a neutral.
Wouldn't it just sum up this season, though, if Reading lose to Bradford? It would just be a continuation of
I think
all things bad.
Completely kill everything. That I think this game could be the most important game of the season against Bradford. If we get through to the semi-final, suddenly there's optimism around the club. If we don't, you think, what is the point of the next 2 months?
Reading have scored in 2 of the last 9 home league games. If there's no cup to look forward to, good luck trying to get people to go down to the ground. Cause...
And renew for next year as well. What have you got?
We choked off air.
God, man, I've been I
guarantee the season ticket renewals will come out if Reading get through that.
Oh, yes, they will.
You know they'll come out.
Definitely.
If not, they'll... I don't know.
You can only get a semi-final ticket if you renew your season ticket.
Yeah, now, today.
Yeah.
Well, at least every season ticket holder will get a ticket, because there's only about 12,000 of them.
Yeah.
They're going to have to check if you actually turned up to the last game. Yeah. Then you get priority.
It's that card thing you suggested.
Tesco's club card.
Running Tesco club card.
Have we had any feedback on that?
Tesco's have yet to contact us.
It's gone viral.
Alas, not. Although, speaking of viral, head over to the front page of the thetirelessend.com for a pretty funny video. There's a step in one area of the ground which people just can't seem to get up without tripping over.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'll show you off air, but it's quite funny.
Not Madonna, is it?
No. Right, that just about wraps up this show. I mean, you know, we've covered a lot. Unfortunately, we've had to be quite negative today.
We tried to keep it jovial.
Well, yeah, you know. And again, I mean, we're an open show. I mean, we've read out every tweet that came into the mailbag, and unfortunately,
none of them are positive.
It's none of positive. And if you've got a positive view and want to say that, you know the contact details. And as far as the steward debate goes, as I said, if you're the steward or the fan affected, please get in touch. thetirelessend@gmail.com.
And if you have got a positive view, I'm going to sit with you next week because I'd love to see what you're watching. Nigel Atkins.
Yeah, right, anyway, that wraps up the show. I will be sitting down with Charles to talk on the Tyler Send Podcast Extra. That will probably be on Friday. Please, also, time to get a plug. Subscribe on iTunes, leave us a review, all that goodness, and head over to thetylersend.com for plenty of analysis. Game's obviously coming very thick and fast, plenty of new content up each and every day, so please head over there. We're off. We'll hopefully be back on Sunday or Monday to talk about our Wembley plans.
Mm. Let's hope we have a more positive podcast next time.
Yeah.
If we're not talking about Wembley, I don't know what the hell we're going to be talking about.
Not getting to Wembley.
I think we should do a retro, you know, like the BBC do those
like live coverage things of events that have happened in the past. Have you seen them in
recent weeks? Yeah.
Done like the FA Cup final from 88.
It's a good plan.
We should do one of those for like the 95 playoff final.
Yeah.
So coming in, we'll talk about this podcast.
All right, let's look at these games. The 95 playoff final, the 2001 playoff final.
Yeah, let's steer clear of the playoff finals. What are we doing? Come in as if special.
We'll come in as if it's... we might actually do this because I think it's quite funny. Maybe for the end of season special. We'll come in and we'll review that 95 playoff final because I've still not watched it from start to finish.
I know, I can't watch it ever again. But the great thing about it, if we do that, we have to do it as if it's the 90s. So we can only mention stuff that was around that time. Like I just done that Madonna gag there about up the steps. Then you have to try and find stuff that was happening around that time.
I think we should do it. I think it'll be a lot more entertaining.
I'll have to put my voice to a pitch shifter as well.
Yeah.
I'd be nine, so.
Yeah.
I'll just raise the whole thing.
We'd do it.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, so that's maybe we should do that instead of talking about another drab home defeat.
I'm kind of hoping we get beat now.
So, stay tuned for that for later in the season. We've also got a couple of interviews coming up, hopefully, in the next few weeks as well. Been in touch with a few former faces associated with the club. So hopefully we'll get them on. You can always go back and listen to our ones with Chris Casper, John Halls, and we spoke to someone else as well. Ah, Simon Osborne.
Yep, all the big names.
Yeah, big names. Right, anyway, we're done. If you can't tell by the tone of my voice, I'm done.
I thought this was winding down about 20 minutes.
It was. We'll be back next week. Thank you very much for listening and subscribing and getting in touch. We'll see you around the corner. It's funny how the crowds always leave a trail.